much of the stuff and the spirit that was a part of yesterday's Bible study, and I'm looking forward to each one of these. I'm going to do that in a moment. Remind me if I don't do that. It's very important when we begin. That signals somebody in the to turn on. Tuesday, June 7th, I think. Our Bible study again on the images of life, and our image that we'll be dealing with today is the image of birth. The text that we'll finally come to and will be the focal of our focus point of our reflections is John 16, 19 to 22. Again, let us prepare ourselves by prayer. I invite you to take a moment of silence, and if you wish to add your own petitions, requests at that point, and that will set us in motion for our study. Spirit of the living God, renew us in our baptismal covenant, for we know that you have given us birth, but invite us to be born again daily. Spirit of God, empower us with your promise of life in all its fullness and richness. Spirit of God, help us to see beyond the travail of hurt, of pain, to the life that is to be. Amen. Again, we'll follow the same pattern. As I noted yesterday, following the direction or the insights of the World Council of Churches, study that's suggested for groups around the world. Again, material suggested for all kinds of cultures and places and conditions of people. So I'd hope at this very moment some of these same issues and texts are being studied from people in the Southwest Pacific Islands, behind the Iron Curtain, in a variety of languages and contexts. And that will be a part of our thought as well. Again, the pattern, three aspects of our approach, the pattern that we'll have. First of all, simply to take a look at the image. Today, it is the image of birth. Surprising things about it. And then to connect that with some of our own experiences that that image brings to mind, that relates to it. And finally, to consider some texts, and especially the text, the John 16 text, which will be the focal text for us. Along each of these points, each of the three, I invite your sharing. If I don't allow you, jump in, but I intend to allow a good bit of sharing at this point. First of all, yeah.
Didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I should have been on the introduction. I forget. I'm Dwayne Addison. Thank you. And I'm not sure what I'm going to say. My wife Carol is here. Our kids are wandering around. I've been teaching for the past 16 years at Augustana College. Part of my interest in the World Council of Churches study, by the way, is that I will be at Vancouver in late July, early August myself. But a long interest in these dimensions. Okay. A part of the study, and I have not been able to share it with you very well, I've talked to Images of Life, and they prepared materials that are not only by the ear, but are also by the eye. And I could have got a set of posters, but they were not complete for all the images. Why, I don't know. The one yesterday about the way was the young man in a motorcycle in a traffic jam. And that was one of the modern images of the way. The images are multicultural. They are very contemporary in many cases. The one for this that you cannot see, I think a very beautiful picture. It is what I would call graceful. It is a picture of a Thai woman from Thailand who is obviously very pregnant. And the beautiful silhouette set in her land, again, as an image of birth. A frequent image in the Bible. One of those that is most striking, I don't know if you're familiar with that, is in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah 42. It is such a striking image that Abraham Heschel, the Jewish biblical scholar, calls it absolutely shocking for his portrayal of God identifying himself in the image of a pregnant woman about to give birth. And some of you may be familiar with the argument that that portion of Isaiah 40 to 55, it is suggested, may have been written, humanly speaking, by a woman. For the virtues and the qualities of God in that body of biblical text are the qualities and the virtues of a woman and that society, and they would be largely in our society as well, of compassion, of tenderness, of care. Well, men can have these too, but the ancient Hebrew patriarchal culture didn't allow much for that. Neither does ours. And that passage from Isaiah 40. It is God herself speaking, perhaps. For a long time, I have held my peace. I have kept still and restrained myself. But now I'll cry out like a woman in travail. I will gasp and pant. Then he goes on, in the pain that will give new birth to a nation that has been dead, that has been in exile, is now about to be brought forth. And the human writer is chosen to use, whether it's a woman or not, we can never know, the image of giving birth. And a part of that image is that of labor and travail. In the midst of pain, you look forward in hope. I'm going to ask you to share some other images or biblical materials along the way. But let me share some other notes to talk about the image, to connect it with life. The Gospel of John, I think most of us know, has as its central theme the image, the idea of life. It begins in the prologue, the word, that is God's message, the power that brings all things together, the logos. The word was the source of life, and this life brought light to humankind. Or again, in that passage about incarnation, that wasn't clear yesterday, that's the one I want to put through. That word became a human being and full of grace and truth and lived among us. Or in the biblical text, it is the idea of tenting, temporarily dwelling among us. Or in that passage a bit later in the Gospel of John, in the parable of the shepherd, I have come in order that you may have life, life in all its fullness, or most common translation, the abundant life. The image of life. It is one of those obvious ones, perhaps, and therefore we overlook it, and we miss its power and its meaning. Again, like I think all of the images we'll look at this week, it is one of those universal images. Any culture, any time, any people, it is something that we've seen and experienced, perhaps women more than men in some ways, but all of us have been a part of. It latches on to things that we do and see every day and every place. I want you to begin sharing just a moment about the image. How is this image seen in our society? How do we view that picture of birth? Let me share a couple of things from the study material, and maybe you can put your thoughts together and get sort of facets of what you see our society, even yourself, dealing with at this point. Two illustrations. Not representative, they say, but two kinds of things. In war-torn El Salvador, a young woman is undergoing an abortion. because she wants to save her child from the terror of the only world she knows. And she dies. That's an image of birth, but perhaps overwhelmed by death. Or another image. In a pleasant French village, a young woman knits a layette. She is sitting next to the window, waiting for her husband to return from work. Suddenly she stops her knitting, closes her eyes, and thinks, will our baby be healthy? When will the birth take place? Will it ever be an easy one? What shall we name the child if it is a girl or if it is a boy? She is very happy. Let me add one of our own. We have at this camp twin sons. You may not recognize them even as brothers. They don't look alike. And so we're wondering, you know, if they're the same family sometimes. We wonder, but we know they are. And our own experience. Maybe I should let my wife tell this, but I've got the podium at this point. And this around Christmas. I was just completing my residency for graduate study in my last year of that, and we were looking forward to going out, beginning our family after a long delay. And Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. That's right. Yeah. Well, it was completed as Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Carol had a miscarriage. Our hopes were dashed. But for the moment, the next Christmas, just before, the week before our twin sons were born in a very difficult labor. That would have been death, I think, if not for a very gifted doctor, the resources of modern medicine, particularly for Carol herself, and perhaps for the second child. But two healthy babies, and another Christmas Day, we brought them home from the hospital, our firstborn. How does our society look at birth? What are the facets of the image? Again, the image itself. About that story of the woman in El Salvador that does not want to bring a child, and compounded by her own death, or the story that John Lindsay told last night in the hospital.
When you talk of birth, it reminds me of breath. I guess maybe biblical issues of breath of life and just new creation with each breath we take.
Take it with breath.
I think of that version of creation by James Weldon Johnson.
Yes.
I happened to read it to my daughter just a week ago, and she wasn't feeling well, and she regressed to the point of wanting a bedtime story, and I opened up the book and happened to see that again, and so I read it to her. And we've had the recording of that, which is done so powerfully by Negro spiritual singers. And into it he blew the breath of life, and man became a living soul. It's such a... It carries up on the point just brought up, you know, just sort of puffing in that life.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that? James Weldon Johnson called Creation, or God's Trombones, is a series of Negro sermons taken from the 19th century, or imagined anyway. Not only that, I play that for my class. We deal with the creation text in Genesis, and it ends in you know, like a mammy, you know, the creation of man, humankind, like a mammy, he bends over and cares for it, and that's the beginning image of birth of humankind. And that, and my students are some of them are offended by that image of a black mammy as being, thank God, you know, they, you know, if they don't have trouble with Isaiah 42, they have trouble with that one. Other ways our society.
Spring or springing forth, just walking up the trail, the new shoots of life coming out of the ground.
Yeah. Moving around human birth, you know, I just, you know, we've probably been thinking about human beings, but all life around us comes forth. That's one of the themes in the Feast of Life book. They take the image of spring and spring of the season of the year, and it's characterized by life. In fact, most of the religions of the world, even Jewish Christian faith, takes that as a central thing, the marvel of nature that seemingly dead comes to life again. And we can imagine so-called primitive peoples, what the awe that the must have caused after living in a temperate climate. And perhaps we've lost that.
We seem to want to manage birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We, friends of mine, we kind of were a little bit before that time, but the use of ultrasound and the use of all the different techniques to make sure that the child is not deformed in any way, and if it is, to consider abortion, to time the birth so that it's convenient in the economic life of the couple, mm-hmm. and their educational planning, to yeah. even... we read in China, even selecting male and female, and that becoming more current in our own society, that we want to be lords of that life. There's unease, real unease.
Well, I think that birth means responsibility and accountability. I think of the tailings here and how carefully all the plants have been planted, and we walked up around there a little bit the other day, and how careful we were not to step on the little new shoots that were coming up. And I think of young couples that we know who see birth, a new child, you know, maybe their first child, as a great responsibility, especially in these times, the economics we have. You know, that once you decide to start your family, you know, that is a huge responsibility. And therefore people, you know, sometimes opting not to, or avoiding quite a while. So I see it as, you know, I agree that, you know, we do try to control it, but I think once there is that new spark, that new birth, that we are accountable and responsible, we need to nurture that.
Where's the balance in that? I think of the birth of our son, that there not been a... You know, in a university town with hundreds of facilities and that sort of management of health, Carol and perhaps under either of our sons would not be here. And somewhere in between that managing and then being responsible.
And the change we've made in our in the last couple of generations from large families to small, just for the sake of the care of the earth. Mm-hmm. Being a sterile male, you know, what would that have meant to my father or to my
unthinkable in the Old Testament perspective, because the meaning of life is you pass it on, and to prevent that is to go against the intention of Yahweh.
And maybe that's, you know, just sometimes you mentioned a sterile male, and I was just thinking sometimes that means life, really, because instead of choosing to have large families, we choose smaller families, which gives life to the earth, because there's not as many people using resources, and makes it I don't know, but there's a neat paradox in that, in some way, that life sometimes comes out of choosing not to have birth or something.
How do you choose life? You know, it may be something different.
Maybe instead of talking just about choosing life, how do you choose life abundantly? What kind of qualities do you want to put on life?
We choose the good life, but maybe our choosing or accepting the good life or sharing in the choice for that means lack of survival, lack of life, and it was basic sense for others. And perhaps we move too easily from that passage in John that speaks about the abundant life, or life in its fullness, and do not realize the costs.
I think abundant life can be simple, too.
I think we have to learn that.
I think that we just can't say that abundant life means, you know, owning two cars and having your house in the suburbs and stuff like that. But, I mean, as everybody's noticed here, I mean, life, the meantime is an abundant time for all of us, mm-hmm. at least for myself. And that is very simple and very community oriented and simple use of what God has given us. And it's very abundant.
How about other things? This theme, or the controlling, or other aspects?
I think if you, along with birth, you have to look at the flip side of death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go on.
Well, basically, that another thing came along was I was reading Paul where you die. One of the passages talk about is the blowing out of a lamp and entering in through a door to a new life. Is that
I can't imagine. I can't even put my finger on that now.
Yeah. And there, of course, you go into a new birth.
Well, it's in the Bible. I think it's Jesus who's speaking. Unless a grain of wheat fall to the ground and die, it cannot bring forth new life.
Yeah.
So sometimes involved in birth is a dying to old things or old ideas or old restrictions or old ways of doing things, methods. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're talking about when you say we're dying to the fact that big means better.
Yeah. That image of Jesus, you know, that again, the way agriculture was understood, that the seed must die in order that new life come forth, and death is necessary for life. Or Paul's idea of teaching about resurrection, we are mortals, and immortality must be put on. Not that natural progression, but death precedes life.
Jesus said to Nicodemus, you must
be born. She's stealing my show again, go ahead.
Jesus said to Nicodemus, you must be born again. And Nicodemus said, well, how can I do that? Can I go back into my mother's womb? And he said, what? You're a teacher of spiritual matters, and you don't understand that you have to be born of the Spirit. And mm-hmm. I think spiritual growth requires that we bring ourselves and things in us to death.
You know, horror movies, they had the zombies, the living dead. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, we were very concerned with the life beyond death topics, mm-hmm. studies on those. Somebody turned that around, being concerned that we experience life before death. I look around my community and I see people caught up in just bouncing around off of one another, and frantically spending their lives doing nothing except rubbing up against people and not possessing a sense of life that Nicodemus and Jesus were talking about.
I think there's something else that John said earlier that has to do with the managing of birth, and I think that's to make birth convenient.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the pain of birth.
One of the feelings you're not worried about.
And that would make sense. But another way is the other dimensions of birth in my own life, experience of new life. And what Joe was talking about in terms of something dying for the new birth. I like that new thing about the pain of the death.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make it convenient. So a lot, I think, back to the image, to the actual birth of a child, we do a lot to make that birth convenient. Mm-hmm. And for the doctor.
Mm-hmm. You induce it if it comes on a weekend or before golf.
My wife's worried right now that ours will be born at Christmas. Where will I be?
Especially nice to get him in December 31st.
the birth of our first child, the doctor, coming up for ours, and had been called for ours, and then it was not our
physician, it was a substitute because our physician was out hunting. So, but another woman suddenly had, we rushed into delivery. The birth of our daughter, Paul, and he complained about getting blood on his new shoes in the first one because it was inconvenient for him to have to rush into them. He didn't have time to put on, change his shoes and put on his shoe socks and all this stuff. And I think that the just convenience don't make you suffer too much.
What about making birth into an object, the physical birth, the babies into objects, into a dualism? If, I have a baby because it's tax write-off, or I'll get more money from welfare, and they're objects to be played with. I will not have more babies, not because I want to love the ones I have now, but because I don't want more care for more of them, Mm-hmm. So the choice is not to have fewer, but the choice is not to have more, and they become very objects, and we get into the whole dualism of the spirit and the body, and we take that to extremes, then we can have war and hatred in the world, because it's okay to kill the objects, because they're going to live forever in spirit. And so we start controlling, managing, and seeing people as objects, then thus babies are objects, to have whole rhetoric over the abortion mm-hmm. issue. And, not feed a deformed, that baby doe, that baby was mentally have Down syndrome, a few other birth defects, and so that the baby died because it was an object. And that was a decision that was made.
Mm-hmm. He was talking about doctors. I don't want to jump on that bandwagon too much, but I remember when our two daughters were born, my wife selected to have a midwife do it. Female nurse midwife, mm-hmm. and I remember a lot of feelings participating or watching the birth. First thing, though, I thought, and talk about managing. A friend of ours was in a small town in Idaho, and the doctor delivered a lot of babies and said, "Oh, you can deliver your own child." And I thought, "Hey, that's great. I'll do that with mine as well." I wanted to be right in there controlling and managing all the time. But as I watched these nurse midwives doing their work, and especially the rapport there was between my wife and these women, I discovered a real sense of powerlessness as a male in that setting. And
Hard on the ego.
Pardon me?
Hard on the ego.
Yeah, it was good for my ego, actually. I guess it was that I was... I had a sense of being out of place, even though I was the husband and the caretaker of my wife and the father and caretaker of my children. I was really kind of a fifth wheel there. And I see that at times now as well. It's hard on me. Because they're all... Anyway, it's... It was really good for me to discover some of my own femininity, I guess you could say, and accept that, mm-hmm. and also realize how alien I was in that particular setting, and that there's a place for me. But
I think in terms of that kind of management, it's really positive for women that we are becoming better informed about the birth process and participating in it. I think it's a real
positive. You're not just passive about it. No.
I would also say we have a third child coming along, and there aren't midwives practicing the area where we're living. And this was a real threat to us, to both of us, after having such a positive experience with. I don't know how to talk about it, but it was the female component to the whole process that was so very important for my wife. She went into this clinic, and it was run by a female gynecologist. There were women in the clinic. There weren't any men there. And she looked forward to going to her appointments. She'd get in there, and she'd walk around, talk to everyone, just like it was just like it was home for her, but with a male physician, a real coolness. And, the whole thing. And now I notice that there's a certain amount of threat, even though this physician that we found is a supportive sort of fellow and recognizes some of these things. There was a whole nurturing sort of a conclave to the first two verses that we're not going to enjoy this third time.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't know names.
Is it you?
No, you.
Well, I just wanted to say something about my last experience. It was the sixth child, 7 years after the last one. Mm-hmm. And I had been involved in world population control classes. My feelings were very, very mixed.
Understatement.
And in fact, I went into a state of depression because I thought, oh dear, you know, here, I've done it again. And there was one comment I remembered from a neighbor, and she had told me when I had five, she said, you really shouldn't have had more than two. And she made a judgment about it at that time. And I thought, oh, that's too bad. I've had three that I really shouldn't have. Anyway. It was really quite an experience for me to go through this again, and I really was depressed up to the point of birth. And I happened to have a different doctor because my doctor was out of town. And there was something about the whole atmosphere in the birthing of that baby that morning that it just seemed like he was the only baby being born that day. And the whole atmosphere of the nurses around me just gave me a feeling of joy at the time. And acceptance, and which there was a very sad thing happened in the same room with me. One young lady lost her baby. He was named the same as my little one. Mm-hmm. And I felt so badly for her. This was her second child. And here I had one that I hadn't Lowness. Really wanted all that much. But why is this one live and one die in situations like that? But he has been a real joy to me. And a very special baby.
Yeah, and John shared some of that last night. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yes, I can share. Yeah.
Statistically, you're supposed to have 2.4, I think.
You round those up, I think.
I had six children, and my oldest was 31. And when people say that to me, I say, well, I was socially irresponsible for ignorance. You'll have to excuse me.
The image that I've been thinking about is so frequently in the Old Testament in particular, the sadness of barrenness and yes. and how that was so overwhelming. And wondering how God then, if we think of God as being a mother, how he feels about barrenness. Mm-hmm. And then the part about Abraham and Sarah and how when they were told that they would bring forth a child in their old age, she laughed.
Yeah.
just the ridiculousness of it. And
God laughed, and they named their son Laughter.
We've been laughing ever since.
Yeah.
But even in our own days, for women who are barren, you talk about sterile male, that's a more or less secret kind of thing. But a barren woman, I think we need to be more loving in how we relate to people who do not have children, whether it's a choice or whether it's a physical condition which prevents it. And they have to live in our culture more or less in silence too, unless they find a group in which they can share that problem.
There's a special kind. I don't know if you're referring to this, but there's a special kind of barrenness with abortion. A friend of mine, my wife's, is single, became pregnant, and decided that she didn't want to opt for welfare and that kind of a life, and wanted to continue with her job, her career, and so forth, and went for an abortion. And it was I remember her. She phoned twice. before she went to the abortion, I talked to my wife quite a while, and my wife writes a shared with me the conversation. And the lack of support there was for her. And then some of the things that she went through, like she went through a period where she did a lot of nest building and so forth. She bought a house. She set it all up. She didn't make a room for a child, but she set it all up like that. This kind of nesting sort of thing, and the dreams that she shared with Maritza, picturing the child, naming the child, things like this, and the whole grief process. And there was a nurse and a social worker that was available to her, who did call on her. There was. There was a real lack of support, and I would say that was part of her barrenness. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I'm not going to make any reference to the abortion itself, it was a choice for this, and in a sense, she was firm on the choice, but she had some real anguish about it. I'm also acquainted with a couple that had two children, and the mother became pregnant again, didn't want a third child, had been waffling on tubal ligation for a while, and became pregnant. And out of depression and anxiety, went for an abortion. The same sort of a thing, the same sort of a grieving process. And then became pregnant again. Talk about depression and grieving and so forth, it was amplified the second time, and it was within a year's space that this person became pregnant again. And there she opted for keeping the child, not because she wanted the child, but because she didn't want to go through another abortion. It wasn't a painful physical process, but emotionally and spiritually it was just devastating for her.
Picking up on both those things is the idea, and on the theme of birth, is the idea of family. And whoever was talking back there mentioned, and you mentioned creating some of the kind of support systems and the community of Christ, creating the sense of family, the sense of support for people, whether to include people in the family, whether they're couples or single or divorced or whatever. To bring that as each person comes into that community, it's like a new birth. And the idea of creating that sense of family, that sense of wholeness, maybe, that can be really exciting.
Mm-hmm. I think adoption is like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Adopting babies, it's like a new birth. We've got three adopted grandchildren. Each one left grandma gasping and panting, but it was a wonderful experience for the family.
Yeah. Perhaps say something about how we handle baptism in the church. It's a family sort of thing, and Paul's image of being grafted into the family, both choice and...
We're all adopted children.
We're all adopted children, I think. Yeah. Very important for Paul to see that, because the Gentiles are those who are grafted on the olive tree.
Another story along this sort of line, but perhaps a little bit different. My daughter Roxanne, married for a couple of years and wanting to have a child, and because of endometriosis was not able to have one. And the best treatment for endometriosis is to be pregnant, but it prevents one from getting pregnant. And he has to do
catch 22.
She happened to attend a session where Francis McNutt was speaking and doing some prayers, and during the prayer session, when she went up to ask for prayers for this, Francis stopped. He wasn't announcing what he was doing, he was just speaking with people quietly and speaking, but when she told Francis McNutt what she wanted, he just stopped, went up to the microphone and said, "I'd just like to share with you that this person would like prayers for pregnancy," and he says, "I have 100% rate on this." He says, "Everybody I pray for gets pregnant." My wife is always saying, stay away from me when you're praying. But he says within a year, everyone I've ever prayed for has gotten pregnant. And our Roxanne is not going to have a child in a couple months.
Yeah, well, we prayed for in June 25th last year.
The anthropologists talk about rites of passage, and that birth and baptism similarly is a passage. And one of the things that shocked me was when they talked about death as a rite of passage, that not only is the dead person a passenger, but so are the people who are involved in the process. I think that applies to birth, too. I remember, thanks to the Lamaze process, being able to be a part of, and not being totally left out, having a role to focus on my wife's breathing and her comfort and encouragement in that process, and the bonding that occurred in sharing that birth together. I had a one of my seminary friends who was very involved in drugs was asked to assist at a home birth of a friend. John Backe, some of you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
John, it was John's child. Keith came out, and I knew what it meant in the Bible when it said that Moses came down with the mountain from the mountain, and his face was reflecting the glory of God to the point where it had to be veiled. That was kind of where Keith was, and he went straight after that. He had found that he had touched a holy moment for him, and it was his life transforming to be. Just to be around people when birth occurs, whether that's physical birth or whether it's a transplant, it carries the rest of us along in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was sacred, awesome. Yep.
Something that has been going through my mind and carrying on for Steve is that the helplessness, as much as we have control in this day and age of getting rid of that child if it's abnormal, or if we choose we don't want the baby, have become pregnant accidentally. When you choose to keep that baby, you just have no control from the moment of conception to the moment of birth. Even as a woman, I have no control over what that baby is doing inside of me. And it's exciting and it's petrifying at the same time, because when I go to give birth, Doug is going to have as much to do with that birthing process is me, because all I'm going to be able to do to help that baby is breathe properly and push, and the only thing Doug can't do is push. I feel totally out of control. Well, not out of control. I feel the person controlling this pregnancy is gone. I can't do a thing except say, please help me. You're at the mercy of God. That's it.
No, right.
Oh.
We have a conflict with being very judgmental about third world people and Hispanics and blacks in our community who have lots of children. And much of the reason they have is their respect for life rather than material. That's not true of all cases, but many, because many of the children don't get to live. And that's their will. Mm-hmm. I was in a class with a lot of Hispanics, and we had a lawyer in the group, and he just wondered, well, why can't we teach them birth control? And those women were sort of horrified at the thought of this. They knew there was responsibility, and the ones I knew were responsible for the children. But that was their greatest gift, their hope in the world, was their family, and many. And I think we, as Westerners especially, are judgmental of those people and wonder why, you know, if they're starving, why do they keep having more? And part of the reason they had more is they don't have proper balance of food, children don't live as long, and so forth, and that's why they just keep having many. There's one hope of carrying on. And I think we need to know the balance of that and know their way of thinking and try to understand that.
I think that's true. I have to add another little piece to my pregnancy. Deb and I had the choice in abortion. Well, not quite that blunt. My sister has had 8 children, speaking of large families. All by choice, they simply love children. The first 7 babies died. Each other birth was a miscarriage. and then in between that, we're all different on normal days. In between that time, she adopted 4 children, finally had one of her own. Perfectly normal 13-year-old girl. And the doctors at that point, which was quite a few years ago when she was quite a few years younger, had told her, Mrs. Murray, please have an abortion, have an abortion. And she chose. And she chose not to listen to the doctors and is very thankful for it. I think you're right in the fact that we have the choice to have or not have, and those that decide they want to have large families, who are we to say no? For the love of whatever. Mm-hmm. And we do say it many times.
I just wonder, what does it mean in this context with so many couples foregoing birth of children, just voluntarily say they don't want them? Mm-hmm. Selfish attitude, what are they foregoing if this is a universal image? They're taking that up and don't have that part of a family. I just wonder what that means as far as we're concerned in our discussion.
I don't know, what does it mean for you?
Hard not to be judgmental.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I tend to react that you're doing something wrong. You know, you're cutting something out of your life you shouldn't be. But then I hear people say you shouldn't be judgmental.
Yeah, that's a good. What about that? I mean, take back an extreme case to load the dice on that. I'm glad Mother Teresa didn't choose to have children, there's been that option in the church for years of women that sort of and men, but dedicated themselves to the larger family rather than the immediate family, and an occasion for serving, often serving children. There are many other various valid ways here. So when I say it's universal, maybe it's not something required for everyone. And it must be a choice here. And for some, it is not a choice. It's involuntary. But here we're talking about those that choose not to have family and children. And,
I think that's where it becomes really important to take the concept of birth into the concept of creation. People mentioned new buds flowing from, in spring and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Creation is occurring around us all of our lives. Birth is occurring around us all of our lives. With every breath we take, it's a new birth. It's a new creation within us. We talk about being born again. We talk about baptism. There's just all these signs of birth and creation all around us. I think that as we grow closer in our relationship to God, We feel maybe that new birth within us, all and feel it in the creation that we share. And, I don't know.
Yeah.
Picking up on that theme, that we participate in birth, but often we participate in non-biological ways. And I think of some couples, some of whom are here in the staff, who've been able to enable growth and been performing ministries that would not really have been possible if they had had children in a family. Mm-hmm. So the choice not to have children may be not a choice not to do something, but a choice to be able to participate in another type of giving birth.
Yeah, well, some of my Jewish friends tell me that Jesus was a lousy Jew because he didn't become a family man. Any good Jew that reached that age had already had a family and raising it. And, he just, what kind of Jew is it that doesn't have it? Because that was expected in those times, that every male is father of family. That was the meaning of being a...
So was Jeremiah, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, a few others, too. So Paul's not the only one. And they know this is God's will. I mean, he intended it as a call.
Isn't it a little bit like what we were talking about yesterday? Each person must find their own path.
Yeah.
For some that will mean maybe children, for some that will mean not.
But then you have to take the stand of the church or the stand of whatever people are taking stand on. Now, we are deciding pro-abortion, anti-abortion, you know, pro-life, anti-life. If we all say, you do what you do, and I'll do what I do, then how are we ever going to get together in unity? Is there a fine line in there that we stand on either side of that line, or can we all stand on that line together?
Well, I think that brings up just the question of dialogue. You don't have to have a conformity to have unity. There's a lot of issues that people will take different stands within the church, and yet you still come together in that great unifying action of the Eucharist. And I think that's, for me, that's so neat about Christianity. There's so many different Christians, so many different stands, so many different places, but that there's something where we can come together.
I didn't mean that, you know, we each go our own way and not pay attention to each other, but I meant that each life may feel that it has a call. Mm-hmm. And that's subject to revision, as you see, as you understand. And some people may feel called not to have children. I'm certain Jesus did. And he knew what his life was going to be. And some people may feel a call to go in the direction of family. And yesterday we talked about finding the path, the way, following the truth. The gospel of Jesus as best you can, subject to revision.
I would think before we get to unity, I'm not sure what unity would mean in this area. We're going to have a good deal, even a good deal more understanding and respect. I mentioned that illustration in the material about the young woman of El Salvador that chooses not to bear a child, chooses an abortion on that because to bring forth a child would bring it into the life of death. From our perspective, my feelings, that would be wrong. But I think I can understand that. You'll see later today, many of you, the film Gods of Metal, which I commend highly, and is the reaction of a variety of people to the threat of nuclear war. It's in the Catholic context. And I've showed that to my classes this past spring. And there's one case, a group of teenagers talking about it. A young girl says that she will not have children. She will not bring forth children into this world of threat on that. And that really touched off a discussion among my college students in a Christian ethics class. What sort of nonsense is this? But I think I can understand that. And we went on to talk here about the sense of despair of many people, that there is no future. To begin to understand that, because to talk about life and continuing, there must be assurance and conviction that there is a tomorrow that is open and full.
Your time is almost up.
Oh, my watch is from, okay. No wonder. Okay, we'll move from the, I almost missed this and I almost missed breakfast this morning because my watch is on. Some biblical passages. Why don't we turn that, I was going to ask for some other biblical passage. What time is it, by the way?
5 till.
Oh. 3:30 And I have 16 minutes too. No wonder if people are. John 16. Let me get the RSV that will read that rather than mine. 16:19-22. Yeah, would you read that?
Jesus knew that they wanted to ask him, so he said to them, "Is this what you are asking yourselves? What I meant by saying, 'A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me.' Truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn into joy. When a woman is in travail, she has sorrow, because her hour has come. But when she is delivered of the child, she no longer remembers the anguish, for joy that a child is born into the world. So you have sorrow now, but I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from you."
To what is the text referring? What was the situation that is there? Again, the image of birth. Yeah, Mark 16, 19 to 22.
Jesus
Mark?
I think one of the things you might be referring to is the coming of the Spirit, the Counselor, which will come once Jesus has left.
Okay.
It seems to me there's a dimension, not just out of this text, but out of what you're saying, that birth, like my baptism, is not a single event, but it's not yet complete. And I'm living out my birth, I'm living out my baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And that while there is that anguish of it, in the midst, it's not yet complete.
Yeah. How about in the immediate context of the setting in the gospel story?
The birth process is a pain. Our child Al's there, and mm-hmm. you're so, the last months of pregnancy, with the sickness, or my wife was sick almost an entire 9 months, just very ill with the pregnancy. In fact, that was the reason we chose to have a third child, was mm-hmm. A great deal of illness. And then the pain of the birth, and somehow, 2 months later, 3 months later, that's not recallable.
Well,
barely. Wait, are you speaking then in the context of the sense that he is coming to a new birth for himself?
Well, I'm not giving the interpretation of that, but it seems here that one of the references here is Jesus' own death and resurrection.
That's right.
And he uses the image of birth here to identify with his resurrection. In the Gospel of John, I think most of the time, those are never separated. The calling of Jesus, to die, but to die to be followed by resurrection. It is the image of the disciples, which we can apply to ourselves, that you are going to experience this time of pain, be followed by gladness that is there. If I had watched my watch would have worked here, we would have picked up some other biblical passages besides this. Some of you are aware that St. Paul in Romans 8 picks up the whole world is in labor, waiting for to experience what you've already experienced, the liberty of the children of God. And Paul chooses that image of labor or travail here to talk about what the world is now going through. And it is subjected in hope that God puts it through the laboring process in order that it may experience birth. A couple other things, reflection, and then we will go because the toffee time is precious and sacred. I was going to ask here, how can one see the announcement of life through pain and violence and death? One of the ways that the image speaks to us, because much of the world cannot see a future. Maybe that girl in the film that we'll see later today, obviously in a good situation, but the future is bleak. Or the very understandable thing for me, or that woman in El Salvador that sees no future for children. In many ways, that's the parable of much of life in our day. How can you provide? Should you bring in children in the world, it will mean for them a great deal of anguish. First thing to consider. And the idea of waiting, that's one of the things you can do. You have to wait usually the 9 months or how many months it's going to be there, and very little control, women tell me. And how can that experience of travail, before the travail, but the waiting for that, help us to understand the events around us. That sort of a parable.
One thing I picked up in the passage is this, your joy shall not be taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one thing that Christians can experience. In the new birth, they have a right to joy in life.
Yeah.
There's so many, there's so many depressing things around us, that the power that we have, that we can influence others, is our joy. And nobody has a right to take that from us.
Yeah, and that's the emphasis that Jesus gives in his words of assurance to the disciples, that joy, you'll be seen to be taken from you, but it cannot be taken away.
And our hope.
And finally, yeah.
There's another passage that says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And I think sometimes we forget that we try to think, it's got to be our joy, but it's the joy that in the midst of this we have the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
and that's a strengthening thing. No matter what happens or what we come to, you know, the Lord will not forsake us.
And that's where Romans 8 in.
And it's all a gift of grace. You know, we think it's something we do, but life is a gift.
You know, I sometimes think we almost don't want a prayer to work or prayers to be answered, because then we feel that the control of the whole thing got out of our hands. You know, you see people that my mother tells about, she's a disciple of Christ, and they don't believe, you know, they're dispensationalists, and Jesus died 2,000 years ago, and nothing's happened since. And they had a woman in their prayer group become ill, and she asked them to pray for her, and so well they did, not with too much conviction. And she had a healing that she was sure was, and her doctor was rather perplexed too. And the people in my mother's prayer meeting were kind of angry. And she said, you know, now you're just really going off the deep end and imagining things. And my mother said, that's extraordinary. It's almost like if we, you know, prayer is too simplistic, and if we believe in it and anything happens, then where are we as people? Aren't we managing things? Don't we have some input? Yeah, we almost don't want that.
Mm-hmm. One final note, the notion of new birth, being born anew, or I think one translation is being born from above, the idea of rebirth, like in the story of Nicodemus and Jesus, ought to be a part of a concern too. And so, reflect upon that. Thank you very much. The focus, the image tomorrow will be bread. The text that we'll lead into will be Mark 8, the feeding of the 4,000. Let us pray. Lord, thank you for the gift of life and the promise of new life. May your Spirit empower us. Amen.